This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. This is Washington Watch on Friday, July 22nd in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm your guest host, Ken Klukowski, Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs at First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States, exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Check out what we're doing there, fighting for your rights at firstliberty.org. Also, senior legal editor for Breitbart News Network, exposing the truth about the liberal left and telling you the real news that the mainstream media tries to bury. Find out what's really going on in your nation and your world at Breitbart.com. But I'm not speaking to you today on behalf of First Liberty or Breitbart. Instead, I'm speaking to you as a husband, father, and citizen blessed to live in the greatest nation on God's green earth, the United States of America. We're going to be talking faith, family, and freedom, and we want you to join us. We'll be taking the whole second half of the show, taking your calls at 866-372-7234. Ultimately, that's what this show is about. It's about you, the American people, about how this impacts you. And this is your chance to talk back to leaders in Washington and tell them what you think of what they are doing or not doing. So make sure you sound off and let them know, and us, at 866-372-7234. Now, in the context of what we're discussing today, it's of a decidedly political nature, so I do want to also add that neither Washington Watch nor any of our affiliates makes any endorsements or expresses any position on any candidate running for president or any federal office for that matter. Any views expressed are the personal opinions of your humble host or the guests of the show and do not necessarily reflect the views of Washington Watch, American Family Radio, Bot Radio, or any of our affiliates. Also, I want to start today's show by noting that yesterday on the program, one of our guests mistakenly chose to use a particular language choice. It wasn't R-rated, but it was not family. G-rated, as we would normally want to make sure we offer to the Christian households around the country who may be listening in, especially with little ones. So we apologize for that slip up. But let's go ahead and launch into our host, into our show today. And I'm thrilled to be guest hosting here on behalf of Tony Perkins. Just getting back this morning from Cleveland, Ohio, where for the past 2 weeks on the shores of Lake Erie, America's attention has been riveted as the Republican Party adopted the most conservative platform in American history and then nominated Donald J. Trump to be president of the United States and Indiana Governor Mike Pence to be vice president. We're going to be talking and getting some incredible reaction from some real experts through this hour coming off that convention. And we're going to start off with the Family Research Council's own Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, the Honorable Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati, treasurer of Ohio, secretary of state of Ohio, undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. I could keep going, but then we'd have to go to a commercial break. Instead, Mr. Blackwell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Ken, good to be with you. Let's cut right to the chase, because with the disclaimers and that grand introduction, we have very little time. And this was a great, great several days in Cleveland. It showed that the Republican Party is a dynamic party. We are never easy to hammer out our agreements, but once we do, we're ready to rock and roll and ready to move forward and make America great again. Let me tell you, before you even ask me any questions, that I thought that Donald Trump and the Republican Party, most notably the Platform Committee, that was highly influenced and and in large measure led by Tony Perkins, I thought we made it very, very clear that one of the high priorities of this party and of the Donald Trump campaign and administration would be to restore our national defense, secure our homeland, and revive a pro-American foreign policy, which I think is so sorely needed. And I just wanted to just say that right off the top. We can talk about the, you know, restoring fidelity to the Constitution, you know, rescinding unconstitutional executive orders and restoring religious freedom. But I think people want to be safe at home and abroad. And if there was a strong message coming out of this out of Cleveland, it was that the Republican Party is the party of that's prepared to defend our freedoms.
Well, I'll tell you, it's what do you is there anything in particular about either Mr. Trump's speech or Governor Pence's speech that you think showcased a particular message to the American people that would be encouraging, especially to conservatives, many of whom who have had questions about Mr. Trump, and they're about to be faced with a choice. It's either Trump or Hillary Clinton. One of those two persons will become the 45th president of the United States. What was your biggest takeaway from this week in terms of what conservatives, Christian and otherwise, can take away from it?
I think it's important that, and it was important, that Mr. Trump, as well as the Republican Party in general, make this case that America is a great country because its government is carefully balanced so that no one person or group has too much power. And I think if there was an overarching message in that regard, it was that the Trump-Pence ticket respects the separation of powers and would move against a third term of not only Barack Obama, but in the construction of an imperial presidency. And I'll just be perfectly frank with you. That was one of my concerns going into this. Did Donald Trump clearly understand that this country could not take a third term of an imperial president? And if he did, he needed to do it by embracing the platform that was that everybody is saying is has evolved to the most conservative, forward-looking platform in the party's history. Could he, in fact, give us some indication that he wasn't going to water down the Supreme Court, but that he would restock it with originalists and folks who respect the Constitution?
And he highlighted that in his speech. He mentioned Justice Scalia by name. He talked about the importance of the Supreme Court.
I think what's important was that he also signaled that he was ready to be with Mike Pence, that he was ready to be a partner with the Congress, recognizing that separation and that each of separation of powers and that each branch had its own responsibilities. And that if he wanted to get something done, he had to be able to do it working with the leadership on the congressional side.
Now, I love getting your conservative perspective because I remember being at an event with you not long ago where the host, rather than go through your whole biography, just said, and he's on the board of directors of every conservative organization in America. And the crowd laughed because we all know it was true. So no matter what the issue is, whether it's the NRA and Second Amendment, whether it's life, whether it's whatever, you know, we all know that you're coming at it from a standpoint of constitutional conservatism. It's so that's high praise coming from you to hear this. Do you think that Trump picking Pence as a VP is in and of itself a sign that he plans on leading a party where conservatives are not just going to have a seat at the table, but have many seats at the table, be fully welcome and embraced in an integral part of his leadership team.
Absolutely. I think geographically it was important. Trump has to win the Rust Belt. He has to win the Midwest states, you know, and that means that he has to win Ohio, Indiana, Michigan. He has to make a run at Wisconsin, and I think he actually can win Wisconsin.
That'd be big.
What he was able to do and showcase at this convention was that he had the governor of Wisconsin. He had everyone but the governor of Ohio, but there were enough of us constitutional conservatives who have won statewide office in Ohio to more than make up for John Kasich's absence.
That absence was rather obnoxious, he's, to me at least, and that's not something you need to comment on one way or the other. But as the home state governor who happens to be a Republican and had been a former rival, it's would have been nice for Governor Kasich to show up. But for those who did show up, there was a broad base of support, people coming from all sorts of different walks of life.
Absolutely. And I think Mike Pence is a leader from the Midwest, and that would more than suffice. But he also brings that a skill set and a set of experiences that will make him very effective in working with and working the Congress for the Trump administration. And then, look, while he doesn't have an unblemished record, there's no question that Mike Pence is a man of the Bible. He is an evangelical. His family is strong, and I think that he will help get out a key voting group.
Oh, I think that's true as
not
well.
Underperform in this election if he is to win. We have to get off of the sidelines and be on the front lines of this election. And I think that's where leaders like Tony Perkins and James Dobson and others will be so important in bringing victory to this ticket.
Well, Ken Blackwell, we only have 90 seconds left. What do you think this next week and over the next month Donald Trump and Mike Pence need to do if they're going to maximize their chances of winning in November?
Well, I think they have to clearly articulate that conservative vision in bold colors, because folks are dissatisfied with the status quo, and I'll be clear, they have to do the nuts and bolts. We have to get out there and raise the money. We have to understand our targets in terms of getting the vote out. And the final analysis is about turning out our vote and having more folks than Hillary Clinton.
We've been talking with Ken Blackwell, FRC's own senior fellow for human rights and constitutional governance. We've just got 20 seconds left. What do you think should be the number one point that they're pressing coming right off the convention?
Well, all of us, we have to be very vigilant, and we have to make sure that folks understand that we're a clear choice.
Well, fantastic. We again talking with Ken Blackwell, who has chaired a presidential campaign and just experienced all this firsthand from his own great state of Ohio. Ken Blackwell, God bless and thank you for joining us. We're back after the break.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter question of the week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter question of the week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
What's at stake in this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Bukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. Turning now for another perspective from another colleague of mine who was with me on the shores of Lake Erie over this past week at the Republican National Convention. Again, I am legal editor at Breitbart News Network. My next guest, Joel Pollack, is senior editor at large at Breitbart News. He's an incredible lawyer, a gentleman, a scholar, and his new book, See No Evil, 19 Hard Truths That the Left Can't Handle, will be published on July 25th and is available for pre-order now through Amazon.com. Joel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
There's only 19 hard truths that the left can't handle? Or you just had to cap it at 19 because you ran out of pages?
Exactly.
I
mean,
yeah, I think we can brainstorm a few dozen on that. Joel, I was just talking with Ken Blackwell in the last segment. It's kind of an elder statesman of the Republican Party, many years in federal Senate confirmed presidential appointments and elected office, and in just this incredibly deep perspective going back many years, also having chaired a presidential campaign himself 20 years ago. I'm interested in getting your perspective as someone from a different walk of life and also from a different generation. I want to start out by asking, what was your overall impression of how the convention went over this past week? Was it a success for Donald Trump or what?
I think it's definitely a plus. I think overall it was very positive. It ended on a high note, which is always good. It could have gone differently, could have been worse. And I think the first few days it could have been a little bit better. I think Ted Cruz could have unified the party more. And I think there were a few media controversies early on. But looking at it overall, and especially in the context of past Republican campaigns, I think it's very strong. And I think the way it ended was really, really powerful. I think everyone who left felt like they understood what this ticket is about and they can take it with them into the fall.
Now, how do you contrast the styles and approaches between the two men on the ticket? Give me what you see as the biggest similarity and the biggest difference between Donald Trump and Governor Pence.
Well, I think the biggest difference is style. Pence is measured and controlled and very paced. Trump, when he's on a teleprompter on the rare occasion, can do that, but most of the time he's improvised. You know, foxes and hedgehogs come to mind. You know, you need both. Pence is more of a fox. He kind of knows what to do, when to do it, very judicious, very careful. And Trump is a hedgehog. He goes at things one way, and that's to get the deal he wants. And he goes aggressive. He basically has one weapon, and that's aggression. And that's we may need a little bit of that in certain areas of our life. So I think they're an excellent balance of temperament and style. There are probably some policy differences as well, but I think those tend to fade when you compare the ticket to what's on the other side. I think the differences between Trump and Pence are so much smaller than the differences between the ticket and the Clinton ticket,
I want to compliment Donald Trump, because I agree with your assessment that Governor Pence balances in many regards Mr. Trump. And I think that shows an incredible business savvy. I can see how the guy became a billionaire in terms of doing a sober self-assessment of himself, looking at the country as a whole and saying, what kind of a partner could I join up with that the composite between the two of us, that what we bring as a package is going to appeal to an even broader swath of the American people.
Right, and they really do provide that. If you also look at the balance between business and politics, Trump said a long time ago that his running mate would probably be a political person. That was the phrase he used. And we didn't know if that meant a politician or what. I think by choosing a governor with so much experience, both in D.C. and in executive office in the state house, I think that's very, very positive, and I think it's a nice balance. It's what you want in a ticket going forward.
Now, you're an Orthodox Jew. You and I have both been to Israel separately, and we love the Holy Land there in the Middle East. I would imagine you were encouraged to hear Donald Trump single out Israel and pledge his support to the Jewish state in his acceptance speech.
I was encouraged. I think that he didn't really have anything to prove there. I think his understanding of and empathy for Israel is very much secure. I don't think it's in doubt at all.
Yeah, saying so, "I'm not Obama" pretty much gives you a leg up right away when it comes to Israel.
It does, but you know, Clinton isn't Obama either, so you know, he's got to find something else in addition. But I think what he can say is, number one, not only am I not Obama, but I didn't go along with what Obama did, which she certainly did. I mean, she carried out Obama's orders on Israel faithfully. She's tried to back away from some of the things she's done now in the State Department, not just on Israel, but other issues. But
like the catastrophic Iranian deal.
Right, the Iran deal. And Trump has, I think, improved his knowledge on Israel recently. And he said, you know, he's taken that deal-making approach, that strategic aggression, if you want to call it that, in a negotiation context. He's taken that into the Israeli issue now by saying, of course they should keep building. As long as they're under the threat of terrorism, why shouldn't people be able to live wherever they want to live?
Well, absolutely. And he showed himself, yeah, I think, last night that he would be a terror warrior, and so it's encouraging that he would back up Israel as the same. We've got 45 seconds. What do you think, what would you like to see over this next week as now the Trump-Pence team goes out and speaks to the American people on the stump?
I'd like to see them talk to the communities that Hillary Clinton is going to try to be rallying to her side during her Democratic National Convention. You know, she had a message that she tweeted out after Donald Trump had his turn, where she said that the America he wants isn't for minorities or gays or whatever. And the irony, of course, is that he had just spent his entire speech addressing precisely the concerns of those groups. So it tells you that she needs to round that constituency up if she's going to have any chance in November. And it also tells you that she's vulnerable there, because I think he really is reaching some of those people. And I think that if he can go right to where she thinks she's strongest, where she's going to try to call the reinforcements.
Joel, we're up against a hard break, but I couldn't agree with you more. Joel Pollack, Senior Editor-at-Large, Breitbart News. Thanks for joining.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we're likely to see some continued pressure on oil prices. Oil prices coming down a little bit, crude oil prices, primarily because supply, once again, is being threatened. In other words, supply could be increasing once again as a little bit of a surprise and caught a lot of the oil traders off guard was that Libya announcing that they could be reopening several of their export terminals. Obviously, that will be putting more supply on the market, and that's got some of the oil traders a little bit concerned. That could be a little bit of a concern for oil stocks. One of the things nice about the oil stocks is we haven't seen much of a change, very little volatility in the oil stocks. That is very good news because it kind of gives some indication that maybe they have found a bit of a bottom. Asia markets are dropping, and I find this very interesting. I wanted to point this out. So Asia markets have been doing pretty good for the last few weeks, certainly been holding their own. They're taking a dip because apparently these markets were anticipating monetary easing out of the central banks. And it doesn't look like they're going to get any of that monetary easing. Why is that important? Well, because it confirms the same old thing I've been saying for a very long time, that these positives that we're seeing globally and here in the U.S. are central bank driven. And just the mere mention that central banks may not be increasing stimulus gets the markets a little bit squirrely, and that means they're not dependent upon fundamentals at all.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And America, we're back and opening up the phone lines, taking your calls for the whole second half of the hour here at 866-372-7234. It's your time to sound off. It's been a historic week in Cleveland over this past week. We are either going to have a president of a different mold, a billionaire businessman with a completely different approach to government, with a solid full spectrum Ronald Reagan conservative at his side as a running mate. It'll either be historic because it's that, or it'll be historic because we will be starting the presidency of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I have to say, I don't know if we will recognize this country after 4 years under a Clinton presidency coming on the heels of 8 years of Obama. So I want to know, do you agree or disagree with what you're hearing from me, what you're hearing from Secretary Blackwell, from Joel Pollack? You tell us at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You'll notice at the end, it's like you're counting a sequence of numbers. Could keep going all the way to 10. But the except there's not 10 digits in a phone number like that. Actually, there's precisely 10, so maybe we could try that next time, but that would be the wrong number. So make sure you're dialing 866-372-7234. Let me lay out one point for discussion as the phone lines are lighting up right now. And if there was one takeaway from me over this past week, and actually there are several, and over the coming days I'll be sharing them with you. One of them is the emphasis on the U.S. Supreme Court. It was prominent both in Governor Pence's speech and in Mr. Trump's speech. And with the untimely death of the late, great Justice Scalia, the reality is that the Supreme Court, the composition of the Supreme Court, will fundamentally change one way or the other. This is not about the next 4 years, folks. It's about the next 40. And it's this country, many liberties that many people who don't work in constitutional law take for granted. They don't understand that we had those as a result of challenges in recent years by just 5-4 votes. One vote short of a majority. And in fact, we lost the issue of marriage. We lost that by a single vote. And terrorists got habeas corpus rights. And it was affirmed that the government can look at your skin color when making decisions about whether to let you go to school there with racial preferences. I mean, those are ones that we lost. An awful lot we won, but we won by only a single vote. And all of that is now at stake. So with that, we are opening up the lines to you. And we are starting with Francis in Georgia. You're on Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hello, you're on Washington Watch. How can I help you?
Well, I have a some questions to ask. You mentioned Tony Perkins and James Dobson, good Christian family leaders.
Yes.
My question is, what are they going to say to the Christian nation about the evils of gambling when they have endorsed somebody who makes millions on gambling? What are they going to say about one man, one wife, when they ask to endorse somebody who is one man and one wife at a time? What are they going to say about forgiveness when you endorse somebody who says, listen, I go to church, but I don't ask for forgiveness? What are they going to say about the poor when he makes millions and having the poor overseas work for him? How does his personal life fit with his family values?
Oh, sure, Francis. I hear what you're saying, and I'll answer that. First of all, I think all of those points did come up in the primary. There were people running on those issues. The reality is that now, after the primary election has taken place, one of two people will be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States at noon on January 20 next year. It will either be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump does not claim to be an evangelical Christian, but I was with the room with 1,000 evangelical leaders, including Tony Perkins, Jim Dobson, Ken Blackwell. We were all there, where Donald Trump sat down with us, talked through the threats to religious liberty for hours with us, for hours, multiple hours, and where he is calling for a repeal of the Johnson Amendment so that now churches will never again be threatened with losing their tax-exempt status if they weigh in on the political issues of the day. He is promising originalists on the U.S. Supreme Court who will give us the full scope of our First Amendment freedoms of free speech, free exercise of our religion, and with that, the freedom to be able to live our lives in accordance with our faith. We have that on one hand, or you have Hillary Clinton, who promises that she is going to stamp out observant Christians from our society when it comes to LGBT issues because she says that we're bigoted and intolerant, who is saying that the government is going to shut down what she calls the sources of discrimination. That's the choice you need to make, Francis. It's one or the other. I mean, sure, you could have run for president. Maybe you would have won the nomination, but the reality is this is the choice that you have. And for me, speaking as an individual, because the network doesn't make endorsements, for the sake of my children and their future, I'll take Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton any day of the week. Go into our next caller, Kenny from Oklahoma. We've got just 30 seconds. Kenny, lay it on me.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you for your program. Yes, Hillary is totally evil, and we're looking very possibly at Christians going to jail if Hillary is elected, so I understand what you're saying. But did I misunderstand you and Mr. Pollack saying that Mr. Trump needs to cater to the homosexual community to try to get their votes? I hope I didn't hear that correctly. And one quick question, sir.
As someone who's been involved fighting on the marriage issue for years at the U.S. Supreme Court, I know that wouldn't be me. Tell you what, hold on until after the break, Kenny. I'm going to pick up with you right after commercial break and some more of your calls.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th, the Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, Either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values, and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The corruption of willful blindness in our government makes me angry, especially when the innocent are hurt or killed because of it. You may remember the disturbing image of the covered, lifeless body of a young child with her doll lying next to her from the recent attack in France. How can we help but feel angered over radical Islamic jihadist attacks? How can we help but feel the same disgust at the willful blindness which allows such terrorism to continue? Let's pray that our government will name and aggressively engage the enemy, hastening the day when such savagery will be halted here in America and internationally. Pray that we'll awaken and take responsibility for becoming informed. Pray that God will give us hearts filled with hatred for evil, yet tender with compassion for our enemy, both foreign and domestic, for His own glory. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Okay, this is Ken Klukowski. We are back taking callers, going back to someone who shares my name, Kenny from Oklahoma. Kenny, I'll finish answering your first question, and then we'll get to your second if you can give it to me fast. And that is that, no, I have been fighting in this nation's courts for years, defending traditional marriage and religious liberty. In fact, I'm the lawyer for the Oregon bakers who declined to bake a wedding cake for same-sex marriage. So, I mean, I've got the scars on my back and the arrows in my torso from the battles that I fight every day on this issue. So I am certainly not kowtowing to anyone or waving the right flag, the white flag on LGBT issues. I think the point that Joel Pollack was making is if you have someone who happens to be gay, he would still rather that person vote for Trump than for Hillary. And I agree with that. You know, if someone who's gay wants to have a job, I think Donald Trump's policies have a better chance of giving him that job. And if someone who's gay wants to be safe from Islamic terrorism, I think Donald Trump is going to do a better job of protecting the country than Hillary Clinton, who wants to bring in 500,000 Syrian refugees with an unknown number of terrorists in their midst. Now, do you agree with that or disagree?
I can agree with you for the most part, Ken. Like I said earlier, I know how evil that Hillary is. I mean, we're looking at Christians going to jail before 4 years of Hillary Clinton is up. So I'm fully aware of how.
Well, I appreciate that. And Kenny, so glad you called in and raising, I think, an important point. Thanks so much. Turning now to Liz from Missouri. Liz, you're on Washington Watch. And there goes Liz. Turning now to Rob from Arkansas. Rob, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi. I was watching that speech last night, and what really struck me is the law and order candidate. And I've always thought that things really started to slip in this country when Bill did the perjury, and, you know, he got off with a slap in the wrist, and everybody just kind of turned their back on that whole thing. And that this administration, with the immigration laws, they don't enforce them, and they encourage people to break the law. And then Hillary's thing with the email here recently, it kind of trickles down from there, you know, to encourage encouraging the protests in the streets. And
you
all
know, Rob, I think you're making a good point there, Rob, in that this is an issue we didn't hear about in the primaries, and I think it's because all the Republicans running were running on some variation of law and order. But you're right, that appears to be a big distinction between Trump and Hillary, and I think the lawlessness, both of the Obama administration and of Hillary. I would encourage everyone to go out and get my colleague Peter Schweitzer, his book, Clinton Cash. And there's a movie coming out, Clinton Cash. Folks, you got to watch this and see how the Clintons have made over $100 million with some real seedy agreements. I mean, where Hillary was Secretary of State, and while she was there, Bill Clinton would fly in and have a private lunch with a high public official there, and all of a sudden there would be a multi-million-dollar contract for one of the Clintons' friends, and then those millionaires or billionaires would make a $30 million gift to the Clinton Foundation and invite Bill Clinton to come and speak at their conference and pay him $500,000 personal money. I mean, check this out. You can't make this stuff up. In the facts are too much for us to get into on the air because it all comes out you at like drinking from a fire hydrant. But yeah, I think that's going to be a huge issue. I think it's a serious vulnerability for Hillary, and it looks like Donald Trump is going after her on it. Great call, thank you, Rob. Turning to Gail from Missouri. Gail, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm a small business owner in Missouri, and I have been doing quite a little bit of independent research on Donald Trump and the way that his organization has treated small business. And I've been around for a lot of these elections, more than I'd like to admit. But one thing that always strikes me is that, you know, promises are made during a campaign, but they're very rarely ever kept during a presidency. And what bothers me the most is that there are well over 400 small businesses that have been defrauded through bankruptcy laws, through perfectly legal means, and then, you know, most of those have been put out of business, building these towers and the Taj Mahal specifically. These hotels and whatnot that Donald Trump owns. And that bothers me greatly. It keeps me from committing to vote for him because, and I understand the other issues, and as a Christian, I guess I'm praying for discernment in this because
Gail, let me try and help you with that on two things. First of all, and I appreciate what you're saying. It's a great question. First of all, when Donald Trump was a businessman, he is, of course, making decisions in the best interests of his business. Now, some of those business ventures have been wildly successful. That's why the guy's a billionaire. Others have not. When you've had hundreds of business ventures, a number of them, of course, in any free market system are not going to work out. The guy has made tens of thousands of jobs for his workers. I've seen how his workers really love working for the guy. I've seen how he engages with them. I think it's a matter of when he's the CEO of his organization, that's the team that he's playing for. And in a competitive marketplace, sometimes other affiliated businesses might not work out as well. The second point I would make then, though, is that there's a difference between him being a businessman and president of the United States. At that point, every business is a business that he has a stake in. And he's not going to be running any businesses. It's just a matter of creating a legal and regulatory environment and a labor environment where businesses can grow and flourish and become prosperous, as opposed to what I think you're going to hear this next week from Hillary Clinton, and that's that you don't pay enough in taxes, you're not paying your fair share, that we need to grow the entitlement state, and that we don't have enough regulations. That she has promised, for example, she has promised that she is going to put coal mines out of business, which means coal workers out of work. She's promised to do it to steel workers. She's promising to do it to oil and gas. These are people who need to have jobs. And that, I think, is going to plow under a ton of small businesses along the way. So, Gail, I hope that helps you. And thanks for a fantastic call. Turning now to David from Arkansas. Keep it coming, folks. David from Arkansas. This is Washington Watch. I'm Ken.
Good afternoon, Ken.
Hello, David. How may I help you?
My comment is, you know, I've heard a lot of people bashing Ted Cruz for not endorsing Trump. And, you know, they need to lighten up and everything. If you've ever seen the movie God's Not Dead, what would people think about a Christian person in that young man's shoes that went ahead and signed that paper instead of staying with his convictions and fighting for what he believed in? It's not going to make a hill of beans to Trump. You know, if they think they're going to lose...
I'll tell you what, David. I think I have to, because we're short on time, so I'll jump right in. I think I have to completely disagree with you. The purpose of a convention is to the purpose, and we do this every 4 years, nothing to do with Trump. We do it, we speaking Republicans, I'm a Republican personally, again, the network is not. The Democrats do the same thing. It is for the team to select their captain and then to rally all their troops around their captain. Ted Cruz was not under a legal obligation to give a speech at the convention. If he didn't want to endorse Donald Trump or support Donald Trump, then he could have declined to be there. Beyond that, he could have just talked about why it's important to defeat Hillary Clinton. He could have even said, months ago, when I was asked, along with everyone else on the stage, if I would pledge to support the eventual nominee of the Republican Party, I raised my hand and gave my word, and I am here tonight to keep my word. I'm a man of my word. I mean, he could have just done that. He didn't have to say that he liked the guy. He didn't have to say that he agreed with the guy. He could just say that he already pledged that he was willing to support anyone on that stage against Hillary Clinton and then didn't do it. I you know, Ted Cruz has been a friend of mine for years. I can say a lot of good things about Ted Cruz. I'm not a fan of how things went down this week. I don't. If you really believe that the country's on the line, and you really believe that Hillary Clinton would be a catastrophic disaster to the United States and we would lose the Supreme Court for a generation, and with it religious liberty, free speech, the Second Amendment, and a whole bunch of other things, then I think that's the time to stand up and say, hey, look, at minimum, I have a lot of disagreements with this guy, but I think we need to defeat her. So that's my take, David, and that's where I see the difference between that and the movie. But thanks for calling. Turning to John from Texas. John, you're on Washington Watch.
Yes, this is John.
Yeah. Hi, John. I'm Ken.
We all applauded Kim Davis for making a stand against the LGBT community. And, you know, we're supposed to sign on with Donald Trump now, and at the convention he sided with the LGBT community. How do we square that?
I think the way we square it, I mean, I was down there on the convention floor, and the way we square it is this. I want a Supreme Court that understands that the right to be able to share my Christian faith and live my Christian faith are fundamental rights secured by the First Amendment to the Constitution. And because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, it trumps any other lesser form of law at the state or federal level, while at the same time, there is no constitutional right to redefine marriage and no constitutional right to go into a bathroom that doesn't match the parts that you were born with. And Donald Trump is pledging that these things, most of these things, are going to be decided not by the second branch of government, the executive, but by the third branch of government. And if you look at that list of potential Supreme Court justices that he put out, those are fantastic. And we need to gain a majority on the Supreme Court that will interpret the Constitution according to the original meaning of its words. And between that and Hillary Clinton, that, John, I think is the seminal difference between the two. What do you think?
We have no reason to believe that he's going to hold to that.
We don't have. And well, I mean, he says it every week. I mean, it's you cannot say, all right, let's tackle that. Do you think that the odds of him, what do you think that, give me a percentage, just pluck a number out the air. What do you think the odds are that he's going to stick to that list?
50%.
All right. What do you think the odds are that Hillary Clinton is going to give you a Supreme Court justice that'll protect your rights?
Zero.
There you go. Okay. Well, it's, you know, I'm not a math major or anything, but there I think the odds are, is Donald Trump 100% going to give you what you want? No. But the odds are a heck of a lot better from Hillary because, unfortunately, you know exactly what kind of Supreme Court she's going to give you. And I'll tell you, as someone who's been involved in a dozen Supreme Court cases, we are on the ropes. It is on the line. You know, I'm representing some clients in different cases right now where I have to tell you, and I can say this because I'm not specifying which clients I'm thinking of, it is hard for me to conceive of how they could possibly win at the U.S. Supreme Court if Hillary Clinton wins. And I mean, and these are cases that a decade ago or a generation ago would have been unthinkable that we would even have to litigate at all. So it's so that's why for me personally, that's why I'm going to back Donald Trump, because I know for sure what I'm going to get with Hillary Clinton, and it's going to be a catastrophe. John, thanks for your call. And folks, keep it coming. We're at 866-372-7234. I love the calls where people disagree with me. Because, you know, we're not about an echo chamber here. I mean, this is a democratic republic. There are a variety and a diversity of opinions and views. And, you know, scripture says iron sharpens iron. You ever watch what happens when they're doing it? That's one piece of iron grinding away at the other. It doesn't tickle. You know, I mean, there can be some clashes there, but we all come away sharper for it. So make sure you're a part of that at 866-372-7234. And we are going to Riley in Nebraska. You're on Washington Watch.
Hey, how you doing? I appreciate your show and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Riley.
Okay, so my concern and issue is, obviously, for the Republican side, I am a supporter of Trump, okay? Maybe not everything he does, but definitely support him. So the issue is, we want votes, obviously. As far as for him becoming president, every vote counts. There's a lot of people in the thousands that I know, in the thousands that would be on the fence on voting, but are probably leaning towards the Hillary side. And the reason of it is because there has not been any clarification or talk about where Trump for sure stands, and especially his VP on union jobs. And that goes for a lot of people. Like, I'm married 10 years. I have 6 little ones. That's how I put food on the table. I'm a union elevator worker, and there's your union plumbers, electricians, and all these people. And in their mind, their job's in threat, that the VP's against that, that, you know, that's a big risk. And there hasn't been any talk about, you know, where they really stand. Well, no,
sure,
we're not.
Sure, Riley, we're short on time, so I'll dive right in on that. I think the issue is, now, might a union push for better benefits or higher wages? Sure, I mean, that's always the case. At any given level, you can always push for something more. I think what Trump and Pence are offering here is to have a job at all. Hillary Clinton is promising to shut down coal mines. That means that union coal workers are going to be losing their jobs. She's promising to go after steel, after oil, after gas. Those are all union jobs. And so it's a matter of, do you want to have a good paying job? Maybe you'd like more pay or more benefits? Having a good job is better than having no job at all. I appreciate you calling in and yo, come back. Let's talk about this further. Folks, that's all the time we have with Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.